All right, and we're good. Cool.
Hey, hey, Nikki's son.
Hello.
We've got Nikki's son here, people. Me and Mike are talking over each other. I love it.
Yeah.
We're like too
off
excited.
To a great start.
We're like, yeah. Hey, Nikki.
Hey, hi. Hello. Hi.
Such dorks.
Welcome. We're dorks. Proud of it. Proud dorks.
I love it.
Hi, Nikki. Welcome to our show. It's nice to meet you, finally.
It's nice to meet you. I get to see your beautiful faces. They only get to hear your beautiful voices.
That's right.
I would say that they're a handsome group of people, just saying that.
Thank you.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you. And those are the they that you refer to, Nikki. That's 10 million listeners. People don't realize that. But this is our fourth episode, and we have 10 million people listening to us.
Do you hear that, Dax Shepard? We're more popular than you.
Yeah.
Come back to Michigan and be a guest on Film Saves World. You and Kristen Bell. Sometimes I like to shout out the guests that I want us to want.
Oh, my God.
And they're usually obscenely famous. But anyways, guys, we've got Nikki's son here. I'm going to dive in and kind of give our audience a little bit of backstory. So Nikki is a phenomenal, filmmaker. She runs her own business. We're going to talk all about that. But Nikki, I want to start with, a lot of this podcast, like we're joking about having obscenely famous guests, maybe one day, but what I love about this podcast is that we're talking to a lot of independent filmmakers, actors, people that are, you know, what I would call in the struggle. And because people know the LA story, like, they think if you live far away from LA, you think, you think about the famous people who you see on your TV every time you turn it on, or everybody has a story like Drew Barrymore or Julia Roberts. But the reality is a lot of people in LA work day jobs. It's a really tough grind just to make your rent. You're working a day job grind Monday through Friday, or you're waiting tables or bartendings on your nights and weekends. And sometimes it can be hard to even find time to audition, to make your films, to like, it's like you have to cram in the creativity. So that being said, a little backstory on me and Nikki, speaking of day job grind. So I used to be in Los Angeles, the director of sales and director of talent acquisition. I had like 5 jobs there at a women's organization, and we needed to hire like 80 salespeople. It was crazy. It was like high volume, intense recruiting. And I talked to the owner of the organization. He was a really animated guy from Long Island. And I was like, hey, we need to just put out an ad for, you know, actresses in LA and people with restaurant experience who want to have PTO and they want to have health insurance and they're sick of working in bars. And I said, you're going to get the best. Also, actors or people that have hosting experience are going to be the best salespeople. And he was like, put it on Craigslist, do it. And so we had this huge, it felt like a casting call. And I ended up hiring some of the most talented women I've ever met in LA. We all worked at this, like, Mike, it was like this massive call center. It was like the female Glengarry Glen Ross. And we were all on phones and just like headsets and, the sales would go up on the board and we had pop music. It was a crazy.
It was our Wolf of Wall Street.
It was an unforgettable, crazy experience.
Cocaine everywhere.
And lots of coffee. And I remember the ladies, they were Shayna, you need to switch to tea. And I was like, no, that's not. We had to be in the office at like 6:15 in the morning in Century City because we were working on East Coast time. But this is how I met Nikki. She was part of that super talented group. We also hired comedians. And I've stayed in touch with these ladies. So Nikki, you've gone from working the day job grind and the hustle to going, hey, I'm not working day jobs anymore. I'm running my own business and I'm jumping in and going all in. And I think that what you're doing is what a lot of people dream about doing, but maybe aren't brave enough to do it, or they want to do it and they don't really have a strategy, or maybe they're not organized enough or whatever. So I would like to ask you, do you remember the date? Like when you were like, no more day jobs, I'm all done. I'm running my own business. Do you remember when that happened? I'm sure you do.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for that lovely introduction. I was going down memory lane with you, Shayna. I just remember you being such a total badass.
Oh, thanks.
an acting coach there. And I was like, oh, she's like my person on the inside that gets me. She understands me. I was doing a whole bunch of corporate jobs. I'm originally from the Bay Area. I was born in San Francisco, raised in Fremont. I've been a NorCal girl all my life. And I moved down to Los Angeles 8 years as of April Fool's Day this year, actually. Oh, I've been here for 8 years.
Nice.
And
NorCal, did you ever say hella?
I didn't until I moved down here because I had to make a distinction. I was like, I'm hella from the Bay. I rep the Bay Area team so hard. And like, I am that type of person that would wear like my Giants shirt and my Warriors jerseys down here and did not care what people thought because you know, I'm from the Bay. So it's not, I'm not a bandwagoner if that's what is being asked of, from listeners. I'm not a bandwagoner. I've been here since the Baron Davis days, all that stuff. So
love it.
No, I came down nice. Here and I was like, I think it's time to really try to make a change in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I think being an Asian American and a woman, I got two minorities on me when it came to Hollywood. And at the time, like 10 years ago, like YouTube was just kind of like a thing. In addition, social media was barely a thing. We didn't have TikTok. I think we were just getting out of the MySpace days. I worked at a television production studio that was like a lifestyle entertainment music television station for a 10 million household that was primarily targeted towards Asian American audiences. And I just felt like the big fish in a small pond in the Bay, just because it's tech, it's mostly tech. And I wanted to do entertainment and all that stuff. And that felt like LA was calling.
Yeah.
So I moved down to LA and I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. And my whole journey I'll take you on is like, it feels like waves, right? I'm like going there and then I get brought back and then I'm going again and I get brought back. The moment, the second day I moved here, I had a job with Google.
Okay.
And I was like, I've always wanted to show my parents that I could get a job at Google. I just don't want a job at Google. So part of me was
pleasing
like,
the parents with the corporate. Oh, yes.
This interview there, and you know, traffic was so bad. I didn't know the area. I lived in Burbank at the time, and the Google office in Los Angeles is in Venice Beach. And I was like, oh, it's only 26 miles away in the Bay Area. That's like half an hour.
Oh,
I was so wrong. It's like 2 hours.
Yeah.
So traffic was so bad on the way back from the interview that I got the call that I got the job at Google still in traffic. And I was like, wow, this is going to be such a new change of events. And I said yes to that job. And, you know, I don't regret it because it was, I got to be on the Google Glass team and I got to like really fit and work with a lot of famous celebrities who were like part of the beta testers. I mean, we had Lewis Hamilton, Formula One driver in there. I had iJustine, which is a funny story because I met iJustine at Google Glass. I wasn't her personal liaison, but like full circle. We talk about full circle moments. That's for the later part of the story.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to stay in LA with the resources. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do move to LA and they're like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be famous. And then I'm going to quit everything. But then a lot of it is you don't. And then you dry up your resources and then you end up having to move back.
Yes.
And my goal was not to move back. Mm-hmm. Like I am grateful and I'm blessed to have the opportunity that if things went south, I do have a mom that I could stay with.
Yeah.
I'm super blessed to have that. But my goal has been not to move back, not to ask for money, not to borrow money, like to make my own money and really make it for myself and make a name for myself here. So I will say that having a full-time job the second day that I got to LA really helped. Mm-hmm. It allowed me to pay for acting classes, in which I also became a stage manager, because when you're a stage manager, you get to do these acting classes for half off.
Ooh, smart.
So
yeah,
which is doing all these things. And then the project ended, obviously. And I was like, I think this is the time I've built up a little nest. I'm really going to try to do this full-time acting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the acting thing, you become a waitress, but sometimes you don't get enough shifts.
Oh, yeah.
So that's when I started. The restaurant industry is really competitive. Craigslist.
Yeah. True.
So that's actually when I started browsing Craigslist for just another side job that could complement like the waitressing jobs without having the need to take a full-time job. And so NAPW was literally from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. Then I would get off my shift, and then down the street would be my waitressing job at Rock Sugar in Century City.
Ooh,
from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Oh my God, you must have been so exhausted.
And it would just be a long, it was just a long day. And it's funny that you mentioned that, like, when was the thought that you would like leave it all? There was a part of me after waitressing, and you know, there's a lot of grace. I shout out all my servers. That's why I'm always giving like 25% gratuity.
Oh yeah, because I was a bartender for years.
I know what it's like.
Yeah, you know what it's like.
I was a server.
Deal with all these like entitlements, but also just, you know, get to know different various groups of people. And you know, being at Rock Sugar, it is a Southeast Asian restaurant. Mm-hmm. So that is not Chinese, that is not Japanese, but I would get constantly like different clientele asking me, I love your people's food. Can I get Mongolian beef barbecue or sushi? I'm like, we don't serve this food here. And that was just really deeply frustrating. Mm-hmm. And there was a part of me that was like, why am I waitressing right now? I got a college degree for a reason. I graduated from UC Davis, 4-year degree in communications. Like, why am I waiting on tables? Mm-hmm. And that was a hard look at the reality of like, man, what is it that I really want to do? Mm-hmm. So in that moment, I did take a full-time job at the Cal State University Northridge, the Valley Performing Arts Center.
I remember
now
this.
Known as the Soraya.
Is that when you left at NAPW? I think
that's when I left NAPW.
I remember because I graduated from Cal State Northridge, and I was like, oh, she's going to go work at Northridge. Yeah,
that's right.
That's funny. Okay.
Yeah. But I worked at the Performing Arts Center specifically to be their social media manager and also their video director and producers of all the films. So it was a beautiful blessing in disguise to work with 50 Tony nominated Grammy Award winning artists from around the world, mm-hmm. And really lead the social media presence and videos that would go out. And I realized that I like control.
We've talked about this before. You've said that to me before. You like to be in control. I do too, but I just don't admit it as much. Like, I don't own it like you do, and I love that you own it. So continue.
I have to That's own amazing. It because... I have to own it because I realize that when you're in a position of power, you get to create what is seen.
Yep.
And as social media manager, I get to put what goes on our feed. Mm-hmm. I get to create things. And in the music theater world, there are a lot of older white composers, mm-hmm. a lot of white musicians that get displayed, ballet, you know, all theater and art, you know. And for me, I've known art to be more diverse. It's musicians from, you know, Cuba, you know, Havana, Cuba, and it's like the Chinese ballet, and it's just, or the Russian, you know, it's like so diverse. And so I was able to really kind of curate the feed, have you, and like just really put so much diversity forward.
That's
and
awesome.
I realized I got to do that because I'm in control of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized too that being behind the camera as a director, cinematographer, producer, editor, and casting director, I get to also choose who I want on camera and also really work with the organizations who have been doing the work on the ground since day one. They're not a trend. They're not like mm-hmm. a diversity topic.
Right.
We don't just use them for Lunar New Year's and bye. Mm-hmm. Because that's the feeling that I get sometimes working with major organizations who don't really have a diverse staff or crew on their team.
Yeah.
So it was a very eye-opening experience for me. And after 3 years of that, I realized also handling certain budgets of the videographer team, I was like, rather just do this on my own, mm-hmm. and I can work with so many other people, and it's on me then to hustle, to network, to connect, to get out there and have something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had something to say, and I wanted to say it like on behalf of myself and not say it on behalf of organizations. I don't mind to, but it's like I know that I have a very unique perspective mm-hmm. and point of view, as everybody does. Everybody has uniquely their own story.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I really wanted to see more women and people of color
mm-hmm.
Really on screen and behind the camera mm-hmm. as well. And I realized October of 2018, we're talking about dates mm-hmm. here, that I wanted to just bye and like do my own thing. So I even like went to the bank like the next month and like opened up a business credit card, and I created like a DBA, and I was just trying to do everything like legally the right way. Obviously I'm still learning as I go, but I'm just so blessed to have so many amazing supportive people around me who are just teaching me day in, day out on how they run their businesses and how I can apply their practices to my own. And I think this is the year, unfortunately, if it was the pandemic, I mean, I kind of am thriving in this pandemic because mm-hmm. as an editor, we're in front of our computers yeah. hours until 4 a.m. Oh, anyways.
Yeah. So. And where did everybody turn? Social now. Media, locked in their houses. Yeah. What are we going to do? You know?
Yeah.
So for our listeners who don't know this, what is a DBA? You said you created a DBA.
So it is... Oh, yeah. So it's like, you know, you have your LLC, mm-hmm. it's a fictitious business name. So like when you sign your checks, instead of having it to my formal name, like I operate under Nikki Sun Media. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to say that, and the government recognizes that mm-hmm. as a DBA, as a business entity.
Got it.
And I'm working my way towards like eventually, hopefully, you know, becoming an S-Corp or an LLC or an incorporated. But, you know, that's when I'll start like getting on a full team. But right now I'm just... You know, it's taken a year or two, and then the pandemic hit, to really figure out how I am going forward. And I've had so many transitions in this journey, and I just want to share how other people can also turn their passions into a career mm-hmm. that they absolutely want, love, and dream about, because you can absolutely get that if you really are willing to make the risk and plunge and dive in head first and like do all the things.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You're taking that initiative. Yeah. You are a go-getter, and you're like in the business, you can't wait for the phone to ring. That's for sure. And so you're creating those opportunities. It sounds like going above and beyond. When do you sleep, Nikki? Speaking of sleep.
I try to be better about it, but I used to be bad about it. I sometimes I stay up till 4 a.m. For me, like it's until the job's done, yeah. but now I'm starting to create something a little better and more manageable. I've, you know, invested in myself during the pandemic and signed up for the Vlogger Academy course by my friend now and YouTube coach, Cup of TJ. And she has like 500,000 subscribers on YouTube, but she also does amazing travel and food content. But in the pandemic, she has pivoted and helped other content creators get their money, you know, understand that the content we create is worth something, is a value. We don't do things for, here's a free product, do a video. I'm like, no, like this is how you really present yourself and do it in a way that feels like no one's infringing on my values or my belief system mm-hmm. that my work is not worth anything. Because I think as creators, we're constantly creating and we're constantly asking people like to either donate to our Kickstarter yeah. or art. And art, especially in a time of pandemic, has been extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. Again, but being the producer and people knowing that they're now paying me to create these virtual experiences, and I get to hire artists, and I say I will only work with them if I can pay them.
Good for
and
you.
And really
that's
just
that's awesome.
Expanding my pool and be like, I'm going to use this money that you've given me to produce this concert, and I'm going to reach out to the artists who haven't been able to share their art and their work because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so artists are the first people that everybody goes to when they're in a time of need.
What did everybody do
and
during
the
pandemic?
People
binge watch Netflix and Hulu, and they turn to art.
But they are the last people mm-hmm. to get the recognition and pay for it.
Yep.
And so I was also working in the unemployment groups to just answer questions, because, you know, for the first time, contractors were able to qualify for unemployment. And it was also very challenging for me to watch a lot of my friends who are in this business having to rely on their, you know, temporary pay stubs at Lyft or Uber mm-hmm. or all these other things to not get the full benefits. And I'm like, you cannot live on $40 a week.
No.
So what are we doing right now to continue the creativity, push forward, also make a profitable living from it, and not feel like we have to go back to these desk jobs?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the world that I'm living in now. And ever since changing and shifting my mindset and of one of abundance, and that there's room at the top for everyone, community over competition, really networking and growing. Like, I kid you not, like so much abundance has come into my life. All I want to do is share it with other people so that they can do what they want to do, because absolutely, like you can totally do this.
Community over competition. I have to write that down.
Yeah,
and
that's
quote
amazing.
You because that's huge. Because artists do get very competitive with each other and compare each other to each other, themselves to other people, and it can get people stuck in a really negative mindset instead of thinking, what do I have to offer this community as an artist, as an individual? Nikki, I have a question for you before I forget this. When I see how technically speaking,
which is the best name ever, by the way.
Yeah.
That is,
you guys are the best for
that.
That
is so, when I saw that, which we have to talk about that so our listeners can hear more about technically speaking.
Yeah.
That is the best name I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, like, it's super clever. And here's what I'm going to say. So for me, like everybody has different strengths and weaknesses, right? I went to college for theater. When I went to LA, I got myself on film sets, had friends nice enough to let me stand with them behind them while they're directing movies. That's how I learned how to direct movies, getting on set. I didn't go to film school, but you mentioned you have a degree in communications, correct? So with how technical,
nothing film related.
Okay, you're so, you can edit, you're a cinematographer, you're also a host, you can do all these, you can do everything. You're a producer, you can do it all. And I'm going, this girl hasn't gone to film school. So what I would ask you with this, because I can get intimidated by the technical things. I know how to hire an amazing editor. I know how to hire an amazing DP. So that way when I'm on set, if I'm acting and directing at the same time, it's already doing a lot of things. So I'd rather hire people who are amazing at that. But my question to you is, how did you teach yourself how to do all this? Was this when you got that job at Cal State Northridge? You were just like, I'm going to teach myself how to edit. Like, how did you learn how to did it? How did you do that?
Necessity. I had to. When I was in college at UC Davis, I was a student. I got very involved last minute. Unfortunately, I found out that we even had a student television like the last 2 years of college. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they were about to dissolve the student television station. So I would say my legacy, I hope that I left there is as a student, you basically make as many stories as you want to do. Mm-hmm. I did a story almost every single day. I became known as the Aggie TV girl because you would just see my face on the television because nobody else was doing stories.
That's awesome.
And the thing was, we went from almost being dissolved to being fully funded by the ASUCD. And then also they turned it to a fully fledged studio. So now they do outsourcing to other places to film in their studios outside of television. So it's just a proud moment. And also one of my stories on the student tuition increase aired on CNN National Headline News. And I was like, a junior in college at the time. And I was like, whoa, you know, but that proved to me that it doesn't matter what age you start at. You know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, out of the college, you're going to work at a 3-acronym-letter television station and do coffee and deliver paperwork. And I'm like, not me. why would I subject myself to that? So I did the weirder thing or the unconventional thing. And I started my own YouTube channel and I started interviewing on my own and practicing. And I was interviewing again. I think a lot of my passion derives from a necessity to allow my community to feel heard. And I didn't see Asian Americans on TV. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I focused on a very specific niche. And doing it in the beginning is very hard because I had a lot of people surrounding me that did not feel like this is not profitable, Nikki. Like, I don't know why you're trying to interview Asian people. Mm. And I'm like, well, because we each have a story to tell and it's important. And so I would just put these on YouTube and, you know, they were amazing, incredible artists that no one cared to really talk to. Mm-hmm. And news was also a weird thing for me because news, you have 30 seconds to make or break a person. For me, I care about people so much that I like to honestly leave their interviews one-on-one unedited. And I like to be on camera with them. So it's not just a Q&A where it's here's a question and then here's the answer. It's I want to show that we are people, create a Ellen or Oprah show that, hey, we can only be as important as the people behind the camera make us. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to create a YouTube channel that really focused on indie artists, mm-hmm. A lot of people who just don't get their voices heard. Eventually I was able to create a reel with that and like pitch it to, like, I just threw it up on YouTube and I was like, Nikki Sun hosting reel.
Yeah.
And like people who are looking for a host, they will find you because of SEO algorithm on YouTube, mm-hmm. which we talk about a lot these days that, you know, if you're creating content, data is the sexiest thing you can like understand. It's like data is sexy. Mm-hmm. Understand your data, your analytics. You'll know who your audience is, your demographics, when to post. It's almost like they're doing the work for you to be successful. So I've really learned to not be intimidated by the technical aspects mm-hmm. of things and really embrace it to allow myself to grow and reach other communities that I thought I could never reach before. So I think also just being a woman too, you know, a lot of people just say, oh, you must be the talent. You know, even on set sometimes, they're like, oh, are you the makeup artist? Are you talent? I'm like, no, honey, I'm the director. Sit your ass down. You know, so you know, you get mistaken and it's like, whoa, what is it? Is it something I'm wearing? Is it like I'm wearing makeup? Like, what is it about me that makes me feel like I get such a different line of questioning than my male counterparts? Yeah. And for that, I always tell women, learn how to be indispensable. Mm. Pretty lasts for so long.
Yeah.
Pretty is relative. Mm. And, you know, once your time is up, like, how are you going to continue to create impact? Mm. And for me, it was like, okay, I think I got the hosting thing down. I can do acting if I wanted to, but how am I going to create the most impact? And I think it's really just learning all the parts, even though it does keep me up at night. I thrive knowing how to do every part. So when I produce or when I direct or when I am just creating, I know the timeline of what it takes. Yeah. Like, you're not going to say, do tomorrow is an 8-episode, a mini series that's going to air on Netflix with distribution. I'm like, that's not happening tomorrow. Like, you know, you have to know all the things, but like people who don't think that is possible. And it's like, okay, this is just going to piss everybody else off on the crew and you're not going to have a crew by tomorrow. I think just knowing all the roles has allowed me to really move forward and faster. And I never had to feel like I had to rely on somebody for a story to be told. But nowadays, like, obviously I love to work with as many crew as possible because everybody is good at their thing and I love working on teams, but also now in the pandemic and, you know, creating my own content, like the content's only going to get out if you edit it, if you shoot it, if you produce it, market it, all that stuff. Convert everything down to vertical format for TikTok and Instagram stories and then square version or 1 minute or less, you know, like you have to learn how to do all the things. But you know, it's like exercising a muscle, right? So I think a short answer to your question is just, derived knowing how to do all this, just really derived from a necessity. Cause if I didn't do it, my stories or my community stories would not be told. At all. Like, no news station is telling me, hey, Nikki, we're going to pay you X amount of dollars to highlight a story about the Asian American community, because frankly, we don't have one. And, you know, it's just because it's Asian Heritage Month or just because it's Lunar New Year's. And like the next month is like, okay, we're done with you. Next story. And it's, so if I didn't do it, or if the people who didn't have a passion with passions didn't have the drive or the know-how to put it forward, like, unfortunately I don't think it would get out. You just have to do it yourself sometimes.
You're creating space for that, and I think it's I'm also hearing you say, like, don't be intimidated to learn new things just because I didn't go to film school. Like, I tend to freeze up a little bit when it comes to technical things, like, almost like it's math homework or something. And I'm better at being the director or the boss telling people what to do, frankly. I do see the value in learning the basics of editing, because there's definitely been moments where I'm like, I directed this monologue. Oh my God, I have to hire someone to edit something this simple. I need to learn to edit those things. You know, I'm just outing myself with that, but it's hard to do it all. And to do it all well. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, there is value in hiring a team of people who are all really good at their own thing. But sometimes there's not the budget for that. If you don't have the funding and you just want to put something out into the world, it's better to have these skills yeah. for sure.
Definitely. I would say out of every single role that I've done, I would say for those who really want to get into filmmaking, the absolute number one thing you should learn then is how to edit.
How to edit.
Because editing really is storytelling. Because like, if you can tell a story, if you know, like, I'm going to like, it's going to jump from here to here or cut from here to here, or like, you know, obviously let's take out like the ums, and like you really being in the editing seat, you really start to appreciate and value like all the people who spend the hours until 4 a.m. And you watch movies and films with such a different mindset. Like now, like I can't just enjoy a movie to enjoy it. Now, like
you're
I'm seeing storyboards. Yeah. Oh, I see so many bad edits on when I watch a lot of TV nowadays, especially like, where they're like,
oh yeah,
and then cup, someone's like, cup vanishes, and you're like, how did they not catch that? You know?
Yeah, they missed that continuity there, or like even the pacing, or like, oh, that was weird. That was a weird cut.
You
start to notice these things more. So I would say, like, you know, out of everything that I've learned, and, you know, Shana, you mentioned, like, sometimes it's hard to learn all the things, but I said, out of all the things, I would say editing is well worth the time. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you can do it for free on DaVinci Resolve, or you can pay like a $200 flat fee and get Final Cut Pro. You know, with Adobe Premiere, it is like $50 a month. So if you're just starting out, I would like just even look at Final Cut or, you know, DaVinci Resolve, because that's free to start off, and they're all nonlinear editing programs. So it's a nice way to really get your foot in the door, because we always need more editors.
We do, and we need more editors for women in film.
We always need more editors.
Yeah, or if you're a director who doesn't edit like me, you need to get an editor that has a lot of patience. Yes. And I mean, I'm the type of editor, I'm the type of the director that I'll sit in the editing room side by side with the editor, and we're doing everything real time with each other. And I tend to direct with editors who are also musicians, so we're kind of counting things, like our brains work in the same way. But as a director, you need to have an editor who speaks your language, because your editor is your biggest ally. Because if you can shoot something beautiful and the cinematography can be beautiful, but if you get in the editing room and it's not the rhythm or the flow that you want, you can say, yeah, I directed this, but this doesn't feel like my vision. But that's why it's you're so right that it's so good to learn the basics of everything. And that's why I say to directors, it's good for directors to take acting classes and to because a lot of filmmakers I know are very, very technical, but they don't have the acting coach part of them. They don't know how to talk to actors. They don't have the empathy.
Yeah.
That's more my strength. And I'm saying, take an acting, like I have a great friend, Chad Peter, and him and I are opposite. He's very technical. He can shoot, he can edit, he writes screenplays. He's a special effects artist. He does everything, but he liked to sit in my acting class because he wanted to hear how I talk to actors. And how to pull performances out of them in a scene. So if you merged me and Chad together as one person, you'd have the person that can do all those things. But so you've done it all. You've taken the acting classes. You're self-taught technical filmmaker. It's all super cool. Mike, what questions do you have for Nikki?
Oh my gosh, a billion. Okay. I mean, you called Shayna a badass, Nikki, but let's...
No, you are.
Let's be real here.
You're in the hot seat now.
Good. Wow. I'm very, very inspired by you. I mean, there's so much. I mean, I wanted to talk about, you did something called Raise a Million, the hashtag Hate is a Virus, that Sandra Oh was a part of.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. And like, I thought that was really amazing. And I love Sandra.
So I know she's a badass too.
Oh my God. I have a story with her that I got to hang out with her once. It was the best day of my life.
Oh my God. You have to share.
Yeah. Yeah. She was, I was at a SAG after party. I won't make a long story, but I basically ended up getting drunk with her. And like, she is my favorite human being on the planet.
She is so incredible.
She could not have been cooler, and we had the best night. So anyway, I just
what year was this? I'm for some reason I'm big on the timestamps. Like,
yeah,
what year?
It was 2005. So this was the SAG Award party after party that me and my buddy snuck into. I think I talked about this before. And
That's great.
Yeah, and I ended up just hanging out with her randomly for the night. And like I said, we became best friends for the night. And I hope to, I don't know if she would remember me, but I adore her so much. So anyway, back to you, Nikki.
Oh, well, we'll just have to tag her on social media.
Yeah, yeah. Know? I wonder if she remembers. I don't know if she'll remember me.
During this snippet of, yeah. of this thing, you know?
Yeah.
That's how you do it, Michael. That's right.
That is how you do it. You're throwing some hashtags in there.
I'm just giving you some tips of what I've been doing. And, you know, because it's a lot of it's experimenting, you know? And mm-hmm. I think as I transition into marketing and all that stuff, you know, it's... I think we all kind of go hand in hand. I mean, like, I think you always start with purpose, like your why, and that leads everything else.
Yeah.
Right. If you know your reasoning and your why, which maybe some people are still figuring out, and that's totally that's okay. Mm-hmm. That is totally okay. Cause I think not knowing what my purpose was really got to me mentally. Mm. You know, it's also Mental Awareness Month. And that was like not knowing why I was on this earth was also really holding me back and getting me depressed mm-hmm. too. And so
sure.
I would say like, don't put so much on it. Sometimes like maybe your impact is just to be kind, you know? And it's not like trying to create world peace or, you know, like I don't put that pressure on yourself, but knowing what you're passionate about has driven everything. And I kind of had this aha moment. And I think really it has been amplifying voices, like women and people of color, mm-hmm. People who look like me on camera and also behind the camera. Mm-hmm. I tend to go in places where I feel like I'm a token. And it's like, I want to break down the doors, build my own damn tables, and invite other people to the seat at my tables that I've created. And I think knowing that, that drives everything. So maybe like this whole community over competition mantra comes because let's say there's a hosting job and it's for like this really awesome company, but they're looking for someone specific mm-hmm. who's not me, right? Okay. Then I realize, oh, you know what? Thank you for reaching out to me. I don't think I'm great for this job, but I would be happy to refer you to somebody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, that also creates a really awesome connection with you and that other person mm-hmm. who is like, so like, thank you so much for referring me. Like, and then they think of you next time when they have something. And honestly, that's how this has all been. It's like, it's through your connections, but also what value do you bring to the table and what value are you providing for others? Because if you're not providing value for others, mm-hmm. they're not gonna like, who wants to like hook it up for you when you don't hook it up for them?
Yes. You're creating your own karma. Really, it's like pay it forward almost.
And you create it.
It will come back to you.
And that's why it's like, mm-hmm. I never get jealous. And that's the thing about acting. It's just like realizing that sometimes as an Asian role, it's like, oh my God, there's one role. And it's like, there's barely any roles on TV. So everybody who is Asian female within this age and doesn't speak an accent, but does martial arts is my competition. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, honestly, may the best person get it because you are furthering roles for more of us mm-hmm. in the future by getting that role. You're like, this company's investing in you. That's not going to be their last time. If anything, we're just like divide and conquer, you know? So I see it more as like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because at the end of the day, what is the impact that we want to do? We want to create more roles and opportunities for people of color and women behind and in front of the camera. Chloe Zhao winning is a huge for women so everywhere. Cool. It wasn't just for Asian women or just, you know, for it made opens doors for everybody.
And Nikki, and let so me just say about Chloe.
I want to share with that.
Chloe Zhao, that's a big thing. I like really had to post on about this on social media. I was like, Chloe Zhao directed. She adapted the screenplay. She edited. And I was like, I kept saying to anyone who would listen to me, anyone who would listen to me rant about this, I was like, if you're a filmmaker, you know that this woman didn't sleep for months to finish her movie. She's a badass filmmaker. And I know her boyfriend.
Yeah. And on top of that, and she used real life nomads, you know, like, so it was like, that's like, that's another level of soft skills and
creativity
work that you have to, you know, direct the, like, they're not movie stars or mm-hmm. actors. This is their real life. Yep. And so how do you really, you know, interject yourself into that world and feel like this is natural and plays out on screen? Yes. So yes, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Like, the badass and all her rights. Mm-hmm. But I think just going back to your question, Michael, like, it's just, all these things have led me into the work that I do. So with Hate Is a Virus, mm-hmm. with the pandemic, and unfortunately, it's really enraging. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It's frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's painful to see our Asian elders get attacked mm-hmm. yeah. on the street for no reason, mm-hmm. our most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it was sad because this was the second year in a row that I remember posting on social media saying, like, I wish all I would say is Happy Lunar New Year. Yeah. And like, I'm so, you know, proud mm-hmm. to be Asian and like something happy.
Yeah.
And it was like, not, it's like, this is the second Lunar New Year's in a row where we have to address hate crimes.
Yeah.
And this year even more. But in between the two Lunar New Year's, I had a really great friend, William Letem, who is on the forefront of all these rallies that are happening across nationwide. Mm-hmm. He started They Can't Burn Us All out of a response for the 89-year-old grandmother in New York who was slapped, poured kerosene on and lit on fire, went to the police, and they said, oh, we can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. It's not a hate crime. And it was just like, oh, and then, you know, stereotypically, we are told that we are submissive, we're quiet, we don't want to cause any trouble. And I'm like, this is a new generation yep. of yeah. Asian Americans now who will not stand for this crap yep. anymore. Right. And, you know, maybe it is our elderlies, our most treasured in our community. Mm-hmm. Like, family is everything in our Asian community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to target our most vulnerable, you're a coward. But we are a different generation now that will not be like, no, we're not going to put our head down and say like, it's okay, we don't want to cause trouble. Mm-hmm. We are Americans too. We live in America mm-hmm. and this is not right. And I think with the allyships that we're creating, and we must create allyships cross-culturally,
right.
you know? So, you know, we have Asians for Black Lives and Black Lives for, you know, yeah. Black Lives for Asian Lives. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. it really is cross-cultural, community bridge building that we must do.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've been preaching since the beginning of time, that it takes more than us to just care about it. And that's also why I've been going out of my comfort zone and out of my community, because I know I'm Asian. I know I'm a female. I don't have to say that all the time. Mm-hmm. But if I go into spaces that are predominantly white
yeah.
or, you know, Black mm-hmm. or Latin, and give them a perspective and experience like, oh, hey, she's Asian. Like, I know one Asian person now, you know, because like when the hate crimes were happening, I posted it about mm-hmm. it. And like all my non-Asian followers, like, I had no idea this was happening.
Wow. Yeah.
Really, like one of the only Asian people I follow that spoke out about it. And so that's an issue when we don't have cross-cultural allyship, or we right. live in areas where we don't have friends that look like us or we've ever experienced. So I think a lot of that really in the growing up had a lot to do with my identity. It has impacted everything I do in my life. Mm-hmm. And I take it, you know, I feel very grateful, and sometimes it's tiring and exhausting work, but I feel mm-hmm. very fortunate and privileged that if I am given a mic, like I will speak in it, you know, mm-hmm. and I will say something about it, and I will try to make room for other people who are like me to have the opportunities that I'm finding right now. So with Hate It's a Virus, I do a lot of work. We talked about, like, since the college days, I interviewed up and coming Asian Americans mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't get paid for this. I don't pay them to interview. It's strictly like a curiosity. Like, I'd love to interview you. And the other person's like, oh my God, like I just released my EP. Now these folks are big. You know, I interviewed Miguel before he was big, Jeremy Lin before he was big. And then you have Far East Movement. And then you have like Tori Kelly. And now they're all touring. And so they don't remember you because you are, in a way, part of the underdog mm-hmm. where you believe in them just because they are so incredibly talented and you believe that their story needs to be heard. Mm-hmm. So now when the tables are turned, where I'm in a position to pay someone, to hire someone, for them to find a host or for them to do that, we look to each other and say, hey, you know, and it's like, oh, we don't have to say it. It's not even like a favor card at that point. It's like, I believed in you back then. Like, I got an opportunity for you now. Can you do this for me now? And it's like, yes.
Yeah.
So I think just my experience in the Asian community when it came to producing a show like Hate Is a Virus and trying to get the biggest names possible to speak out against hate and really educate our community of what we can do to help each other out and like really be vigilant and other people accountable and ask on our non-Asian brothers and sisters to like really voice their opinion and also speak out against it, up against hate. Like it was something that was very easy because it's more like, oh my gosh, like Sandra Oh is a queen. Mm. If she, I know she would love to speak out on it, maybe if the time worked out. And it just so happened, like the moment I sent that email, like her agency was already like, she wants to speak out on this. It's more about, let's try to find a time. Wow. I'm like, all right. And obviously I get all these other panelists and I always try my best to diversify the panelists. Mm-hmm. So it's not just also just East Asian, you know, Chinese or Korean, mm-hmm. you know, we want to get our Southeast Asian brothers and sisters too, and our Laos and Hmong community and Vietnamese community. So I was just trying to like diversify who spoke out about it and also make it multi-generational. Mm-hmm. So we just had like this amazing panel and we just gave one of our moderators, Sam Hyun from Hate is the Virus team. And he's really great on TikTok. Like all his TikToks have to do with building allyship between the Asian and Black communities. But awesome. He moderated this beautiful panel and it was just like watching your celebrities that you see on TV talk about these issues mm-hmm. for once. And it was just humanizing and just knowing that, would you attack me? Like you're my friend. Mm-hmm. If you saw this happening on the street, like, would you step in? Would you say something? Mm-hmm. And just talking about it, right? Even now, I just got back from a self-defense class that was put on for Asian seniors to help them defend themselves. And it's again, we talk about, we need to go to training because we don't expect to just be attacked every day. So sometimes our muscle memory doesn't know how to respond, yeah. right? We have fight, flight, or freeze.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, if you're not in training, you're going to freeze.
Right. Yeah.
So the goal is like, all right, we hope that you don't get attacked, but if you were, mm-hmm. take it out on me. Like, let's do some self-defense work. And that's also just like with the bystander effect, you know, it's like, I want to be able to know that if I saw a situation, I would step in and not freeze.
Right.
And I would like to call that on everybody who's listening mm-hmm. and, you know, not just for the Asian community, for everybody.
Yeah.
It's everybody versus racism, everybody versus hate at this
yes.
point.
Yep.
Just unfortunately, in the Asian American Heritage Month, we are seeing the most like hate crimes ever. It's not stopping.
Yeah.
And, we're at this point too that we need to keep our foot on the pedal,
yes.
on the gas pedal, mm-hmm. because we're not just something that, oh, it's gonna stop tomorrow. Like mm-hmm. we're still mourning the victims from the Atlanta shooting, mm-hmm. but we have not heard about it in the news since. Like we're on to the next thing already, yeah. but it's like, no, like we can't take off our skin. We no. can't take off our race. And it's like, we need everybody's help to really address this problem.
Absolutely. 100%. And Nikki, can I, yeah. I want to say something to you guys that just came to my mind. Something I read when I was, it was after the Atlanta shooting. And I saw a lot of people posting about Stop Asian Hate. A lot of my Asian American friends, Nikki, you being one of them. And someone posted, I'm following her on Instagram. I think she has a lot of followers and she was like, here's some tools you can use to be an ally if you're a bystander and you see someone that is being harassed or maybe they might be, they're about to get attacked. And I thought this was really interesting and informative and I was like, wow, this is smart. So a lot of people think like, okay, defending someone or stepping in and intervening, does that mean that I have to be really, do I have to take the, you know, self-defense classes or do I have to have a gun or do I have to be able to kick someone's ass? And the answer to that is no. When I read something that was so smart and it said, if you see someone getting harassed, especially verbally, and you think that someone is being attacked as a bystander, you could do something as simple as you're walking by and say, oh, hey, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were here. It's so nice to see you again and pretend that person's your friend. Oh, how's your mom doing? Just strike up a random conversation with them and it's going to throw their attacker off. Or they also said, so I thought that was so smart. Just verbally, how are you doing? How's your mom? I haven't seen you in a while. Even if you confuse the person, create that distraction. Or the other one was, mm-hmm. if you have a cup of coffee, spill your coffee, drop your purse, create a distraction and distract an attacker. So I thought that was really interesting and empowering to think. I just thought that's really smart and something that a lot of people that might feel like, they might freeze up, a bystander might freeze up and think, I don't know what to do, just call 911. Right. But to create, especially if you're outdoors or in a busy restaurant or something, just those tools like that to our listeners, like, don't just stand there and freeze up if someone is being harassed or attacked. In our last podcast, we talked about our friend Andrew's father. He said in the film we created, if you see something that's wrong, don't just stand there, do something. Mm-hmm. And those are the anybody can walk up to someone and pretend that you know them. How are you doing? Or, hey, come over here, whatever, or spill your coffee. Do what you have to do to help someone from, if you just, it's like you said, Nikki, it's that fight or flight. But I think that these are unavoidable topics. And it's, you know, I also would like to use this opportunity to say that words matter. And, you know, this spike in hate crimes against Asian Americans, the pandemic we're going through, it is called coronavirus and COVID-19. It is not the Chinese virus. It is not the Kung flu. It makes my skin crawl to say that stuff out loud, but we need to talk about it out loud and not normalize these things, because it creates this cycle of ignorance and hate. And when it's coming from leadership, people who don't know better, or maybe aren't educated, or are not surrounded by diverse groups of people, and have never left their small town, maybe think it's really called the China virus. They don't know that there's anything wrong with that, but they're participating in that virus that spreads. Like you said, hate is a virus. So, you know, when something's a virus, call it by its scientific name and correct someone and call them out if they don't. And, you know, so that's what I wanted to say there. But
you're absolutely right, though. We've had leadership in the last 4 years that have normalized this behavior.
Right.
And because they do hold the highest position of power, it's you're setting, like, you're in a way a role model, but unfortunately a horrible role model for other people who feel like this is okay.
Setting
because
the tone,
the president is saying this, that means I can say it too. And we've called this out. Since he said that, our community has called out saying that this is going to cause hate crimes. And he was like, no, this is, no, it won't. And now we're seeing it.
Of course it did.
You know, words, like you say, words do matter. And it's really important when I do hear things that are not appropriate to call it out. I think even, you know, translating this with like the Me Too movement and just all the movements, like I think we're getting to a point where like we're not dumb. We will call things out now.
We're just not social media. Putting up with shit anymore. Things.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, It's not like it hasn't been happening. It's now we can record it. And now we can see all the appalling things that have been happening across the US and in other countries than we've ever had before.
Yeah.
And now it's like, whoa, like, you know, even when a certain person did win in the presidency, we're like, there's no way he's going to win. And we all got caught off guard. Right. Yep. So it's like
big lesson there.
Part of me in the work that I do is like, I do care to see how the other side thinks and lives. It's not like a bad thing for me. It's more like, how can we just agree to disagree or also just have debates? I remember when speech debate was a thing where we would just like respectfully
when it was
like
civil
just
back then?
Debate. Yes. Yeah. You know, now it's more like if you say anything wrong, God forbid, like cancel culture and like especially our younger generation, our Gen Zers, I really do feel for them because now their entire lives is being documented from like the age of like very young. And it's like they're going to know better, but we do need to grant certain like education, like resources and the opportunity to forgive certain things. So it's just like social media has made it easier and also more difficult to kind of just appreciate other people for different perspectives. And I'm just kind of get to the point where I just get so happy now when I'm in any clubhouse room or any other room where I can hear a civil conversation where people disagree, and it's totally okay to disagree. But we're not attacking people by their race or their ethnicity or their gender or like you're dumb. It's like, what does that get across? My goal has always been to, how can I understand the other person? How can we find common middle ground? Not to really isolate an entire population, because that is not how we move forward or progress at all. We're just saying like, I only want to hear what I want to hear. And then these guys just exist over here. That's not how we get along in this world. So yeah. I want us to get back to the days where it was okay to have open dialogue and disagree with each other mm-hmm. respectfully. Mm-hmm. But even that's been a little hard now.
It's very hard. It's, you know, yeah. and a big,
amen. Well said.
A rebuttal I got when I spoke out about Asian hate. This was at the beginning of the pandemic because it came out in the Detroit news. People in Detroit, Michigan were being attacked, Asian Americans, and I posted something about it. And I felt like I got attacked in the comments. And one of the comments, one of my friends, I feel like since high school, she's very polar opposite to me. We try to be civil and find common ground, but this was a common rebuttal. Well, you know how in 1918 they called it the Spanish flu? Like, was that racist? And this was my answer to that. I said, in 1918, there was no social media and our president wasn't using Twitter. And it wasn't, you're trying to compare 2020 to the year 1918. And I think we're kind of comparing apples to oranges here. It's a form of gaslighting. And you're not talking about this man that I just posted about that got attacked. So it's difficult, but you can have that conversation in a civil way. And, you know, it's not to attack people who have said the wrong thing or done the wrong thing. No one's perfect. No one's the perfect ally. I've messed up a million times and said the wrong things or overstepped my boundaries, but I'm willing to make those mistakes and then get put in my place because we're all learning. So if someone takes accountability and mm-hmm. says, you know what, I didn't realize that saying that was perpetuating hate and creating this ripple effect of racism. I didn't realize, you know, but you want to, something I need to be conscious of is like, even the point of this podcast, we're talking, it's called Film Saves World. We're trying to open up dialogues about how as artists, as creators, how can mm-hmm. we have that intention of unifying people and helping mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. and creating a dialogue and having these conversations, because it's really difficult to have these conversations without attacking each other, without going, you know what, we just can't talk mm-hmm. anymore. We can't even be friends anymore. We're just too different. But it's like everybody's, I think Deepak Chopra said this, everybody's doing the best they can from their level of consciousness. And I think that I also heard ignorance is, or I think it was prejudice is a commitment to remaining ignorant and not learning. Mm. So you want to say, okay, how can I learn more and have that empathy for people that have a different experience for me or seeing the world through a different lens. But it's hard work what we're talking about. It is mentally exhausting.
Oh, totally.
But it's unavoidable.
Seeing it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But that's why it's so important to diversify the rooms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not really, the word shouldn't even be diversify anymore. I feel like, you know, again, normalize is being so like overused. I don't even want to use that. Mm-hmm. But it's like diversity is normal to me.
Yeah.
So when I'm in a room and I'm the only one, I notice.
Right.
And you talk about, you know, why do we have different perspectives and, you know, why did it offend a person? It's like, well, the more diversity you have, it's more of a reflection of the world that we actually live in.
Right.
And when you have more perspectives in a room and you can have open conversations regards to film or any topic, you're just going to get a better overall better product.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And an overall better film.
Yes.
Because like, we won't have somebody who is not Asian doing yellow face or someone who's not Black doing black face. It's like, who in their mind thought that this was okay? It's because you didn't have somebody in the room that said, hey, this is a little racist and this is a little ignorant. Maybe we shouldn't do that.
Right.
You don't have people in the room saying that because it's a reflection of who's actually in the room.
Right.
So for me, the solution has been to let's normalize and diversify by adding perspectives that just reflect the everyday world that we actually live in. And you probably wouldn't like get into all these conversations so much because I think, you know, it really is just education.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you said, Shayna, it's like, sorry, I didn't know that, but thank you so much for educating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even just saying that,
yes,
you know, gives you, like, takes people away from the defense all the time. Like, oh, you meant to say, like, no one intends to really insult people, but, you know, saying like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Thank you so much for educating me.
Or it's what they
heard
in
the conversation,
that little thing.
That's so it. It's that we live in a society right now where people find it so hard to say, I didn't know that.
Or I'm sorry.
Like, just admit it. Just admit, just say, oh, like you said it perfectly just now, Nikki. Yeah, just say like, oh, I didn't know, you know, and I'm learning. Thank you. Like, I'm going to take that and learn from what you just said, as opposed to like, no, you're wrong because your opinion is different than mine. You're wrong. End of discussion. I hate you. Goodbye. Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. That's so toxic. And like, why can't it be it's like so you said earlier? Like, make it just like embrace the differences that we all have. Like, we talked about this last podcast, but life is so much better. I feel like that's why we were put here, not to get, you know, like we're into religious, but it's like, I think, like, you know, that's the point of life is like to learn from each other and that embrace each other's differences. It's like, it's so much easier. Life can be so much easier when it's done, lived that way. And, yeah.
And you think everybody would feel like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Like getting to know things that are different and I'm learning every day, but that's just, you know, maybe how we operate. I don't know. But it's, you know, I've been very fortunate to like leave my home and like travel and really open my eyes and my mind to everything. And I love meeting new people and cultures. And so, you know, when you don't have the opportunity, unfortunately, to travel outside of your confines and what you've known to be true all your life, it is difficult to kind of explain and like understand. But that's why I give it a grace. I'm willing to do the exhaustive work because I've been told many times and interrupted many times when I speak that, oh, you speak English good. Ugh. Like, are you from here? And I'm like, first of all,
wow. Yeah.
Like, I'm still having to like correct you on grammar 101. you know, but it's like, well, they explain their background and it kind of makes the story about them. He's like, well, I grew up in an all male white Catholic school. I'm like, okay, well, I understand that, but just letting you know that if you do say this, it can be very offensive to other people. I take it personally kind of insulting. I don't represent the entire population or the entire Asian population, but I'm telling you from what you just said, this is how it affects me personally.
Yeah.
You know, and it just have like a moment of education and not, you know, if we just like cancel culture or like delete or comment, like sometimes you can't have a conversation, but you'll know when you can't have conversations with people. Right. I even had like a very candid conversation about Chloe Zhao when people were calling her a person of color. And, you know, I had a lot of people from the Black community respond getting really offended, saying like, when did Asian people become people of color? And I'm like, whoa, this is very interesting. Like, I'd love to have I love to dialogue on this a little bit because I've always considered myself a person of color because by definition, a person of color is anybody who's just not white.
Right.
But in like, you know, the context and structure of, you know, since beginning of time and saying like this, these are colored and non-colored, you know, we also get lost in that too. And like, you know, that part gets me confused because I'm like, well, when we talk about things being black or white, where does brown, yellow, or like golden or like Asian fit in when we're not even a part of the conversation? So it's not like we're trying to offend. It's just we are a part of a conversation. And by definition, we would be considered people of color. I understand how contextually it has very negative historic roots, but I don't think any of this has been brought up since like, especially last year with Black Lives Matter, like, you know, BIPOC was like a term that kind of was birthed from that movement too. So it's like, we're also learning and adjusting, like, what is what now?
Right.
Like, are we just, we're expanding, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color. I'm like, well, that's just a longer version of POC. And so it's like, there's so many differing opinions and viewpoints. But again, I think the overall message is to know that people are different and they think different from you. And that's okay. You know, we are doing the best that we can to understand and learn from each other and with good intention. And I think as long as we are mindful of that, you know, we're okay. We're still good human beings. I think people are so afraid of being called out or being called racist like ignorant or insensitive. And the all I can say is like, sometimes it's a very simple, thank you for educating me. I didn't know. I'm mm-hmm. really taking the time on your part to educate yourself. But then there's also people who are very set in their ways mm-hmm. and you might not be able to have a healthy dialogue. And at that point, you need to cut your losses and be like, okay, that's fine.
Right.
It doesn't have, I can control how I feel about the situation. I cannot control how anybody else feels about it. But what I can do is control my emotions of how I respond and react. And, you know, you always want to respond with empathy mm-hmm. and sensitivity and kindness, but it's not, it's easier said than done sometimes.
Yeah.
I have a great example of that, Nikki. Yeah. At my job, we have these big Zoom meetings and my boss said, what happened over the weekend? And I said, the second female to ever win an Oscar for best director won. And I think I might have said, first female, a woman of color, and one of the administrators, she's Asian American, and she cut me off and she said, she's Chinese. And it's important to say that because of what's going on right now with the Asian community with hate crimes. And I said, you know what? You're right. Absolutely. And I didn't say, well, let's debate about she's also a person. And I thought, no, I know why she's saying that. And it's so important to say, because just the joy I felt that a Chinese female filmmaker took home the Oscar for best director. That's the reason I watched the Oscars this year, because I wanted her to win. Mm-hmm. And I messaged her privately after that meeting. And I said, you know what? I appreciate what you said and you're absolutely right. And for me, it's kind of interchangeable. Sometimes I might say person of color. Sometimes I might say a black person or Asian person. And it's, I'm kind of trying to find what language, but it's kind of like, she's like, no, we're all on the same page, Shane. I knew what you meant. She wanted to say that in that moment. And it was like, it was her moment to talk. It was her moment to say that in that mm-hmm. meeting. And I just mm-hmm. thought, you know what? Those are the moments where I could have curled inward and gotten awkward or defensive and gone, no, I'm being mm-hmm. an advocate. No, it's like, look, we're all trying to figure this out together. And I know it, absolutely why she said that. It was so important, especially what's happening in the world. And it was just, and Nikki, you being such a boss and such a leader and not being afraid to run your own business and saying, I knew Michael was going to be so excited and impressed by you, because I know him and the fact that you do everything. Yeah. And
extremely, yeah.
No, but you're showing representation matters, and you're showing other Asian American females, and just women too, women like me. You're telling me, Shayna, you can learn how to edit. Don't be intimidated, mm-hmm. right? But to see you be that boss, that casting director, and to say, here's how you work a social media algorithm to cast something or to find your film crew, or to not be intimidated that I can do all these things, it creates this really exciting ripple effect in the industry, and also creating roles for Asian actors that are not these stereotypical, cliche, insulting, frankly, racist roles, and creating really great leading roles for people, for diverse groups of people. Because, you know, even if you try to watch I attempted to watch Breakfast at Tiffany's like a few months ago. It was on Prime for free. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever, I want to watch Breakfast at Tiffany's. This is a classic.
Oh, God.
I couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
I couldn't finish it.
Brutal.
I was just like, what is going on here? And it just, it says so much about how far we've come and the awareness that's been raised. And just like you, if an Asian American director had been directing that, that wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened. So it's just. So much to talk about. Yeah. I'm going to take a breath.
I know. It's mm-hmm. so much. And, you know, I was actually selected to film my first film during COVID, mm-hmm. my directorial debut on kind of like a modern love story, mm-hmm. like love in the time of COVID. And it was important for me to find an Asian couple.
Yes.
And not say the reason why I chose them was Asian, or not to say, you know, like, because we think about who gets cast as leads on television, and, you know, they're rarely like a full Asian couple. You know, when I saw Always Be My Maybe with Ali Wong and Randall Park, I was like, whoa, I feel so seen,
you know,
but it's taken all this time to do that. So for me, I wanted to do something in like, you know, to focus on a love story, but because it's my film and I am very intentional, I produce it, I film it, I edit it, I cast it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really, I have control over it.
Yeah.
It's really for me to say like what I want to put on that screen. And so for me, it was very important to find like a couple that, you know, and just tell their story and say like, to me, this is a modern day couple. I didn't have to say this is a modern day Asian American couple.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. this is just what I view as normal in my world and my life. And this is like a modern day couple, Brazilian American, but you know, he's Korean Brazilian. Mm-hmm. Like, he's from Brazil, but he's Korean, like physically, like ethnically. And I just wanted to tell a story, and you know, no one questioned me on that. So it was really cool to finally feel like I was given the opportunity to create a short and not be told like, oh, we want, you know, a interracial couple, or like a white guy with the Asian girl, or, you know, it was really nice to do what I got to do and not be questioned for it. And actually in return celebrated for it, and paid for it.
Nice.
So
nice.
It was
awesome.
It was, those are the kind of, gigs that I absolutely love
That's
doing
so cool.
because it allows me to really feel like I'm getting my message out there and somebody's willing to invest and in that.
Yeah.
So that was the coolest thing that happened to me so in pandemic cool. last year.
And you don't owe anybody awesome. An explanation. I cast these two actors. They're phenomenal, because no one is ever going to say, well, why did you cast a white male and female?
Yeah.
What made you make that choice? Because you know what, if these are good actors and they're delivering what you want, you get to cast who you want because you're in the boss's chair, and representation mm-hmm. matters. Because when we decide to become actors or directors or whatever, you see someone in a role that reminds you of yourself. As I'm even talking about when we're kids, we decide to do this and you think, oh, I could do that. I could do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, I saw My Girl with Anna Chlumsky when I was 9, drama with Macaulay Culkin. And I was like, I want to do that.
The bees.
I was her age, and I had the brown ponytail and this little tomboy. And I was like, I could do that. You know, so that representation, it just matters, because it helps little kids to dream and go, ooh, I want to be like her when I grow up. I want to be just like, you know. So, yeah. Can we see that film? Is that released yet?
Yeah, where is that at?
So it was put on by Samsung, and I shot the entire 3-minute film on this phone.
Cool.
Wow.
Galaxy S25G.
Very cool.
And so I have like snippets on my YouTube channel, but I do have the full film like on Instagram TV mode, like on my Instagram account.
Cool.
But it's called Eslo because it's Esther and Paulo. So their names combined, they like to call themselves Eslo.
Cool.
So
I'm going to watch it.
If you scroll down, if you see Eslo on my screen, that's the film.
Sweet.
Awesome. Yeah.
Definitely going to watch
Very
that.
Cool.
Did you write this too, Nikki? Did you say?
No, it's just based on 2 real people.
Okay.
So we were tasked to film a 3-minute documentary, and we all got different subjects. Mm-hmm. My subject matter was love in the time of COVID. Mm. So this couple actually met during COVID and got engaged.
Wow.
During COVID. Wow.
Yeah. And it was kind of like a testament to how people create connections. You know, how long is too long before you feel like you know somebody? And, you know, obviously with the pandemic, everything has accelerated. Like 1 month feels like 2 years.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to just like see all the things that they did, or like recreate some of the moments that they shared in the beginning before the pandemic when they were dating, mm-hmm. like picnics, or even simple things as making food. But the type of food they were making was tteokbokki, or like a sundubus, which are very traditional Korean dishes. Mm. So it's not like just going to a pizza joint.
Yeah.
You know? It was just very cultural.
Yeah.
And it's like, I, again, Love didn't it. Want to say it. I just mm-hmm. show it. This is them going on a picnic, making food for friends.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point did I say there's this Asian couple that made Korean food, invited an Asian friend at a, you know, like, I didn't want to call that out. I wanted the work to speak for itself, that this is what I view as normal in my mind.
Yeah.
And we're not tokenizing anybody here. So for me, like, that was like such a fun thing to do.
So it was like a mini doc.
It was
like a mini documentary kind of.
Yeah.
Super
just
awesome.
Like a mini documentary, and I got to work with a lot of, I brought on a lot of my favorite brands that have been riding with me since day one to like, let me borrow their gear or, you know, sponsor other things outside of it, you know, because I think having the kind of social media aspect of it, I don't like the word influencer. I don't, I refuse to call myself one. But I do understand the marketing behind the scenes, like power that comes with it, that companies want to brand and partner with you. Right. So as long as you're okay and it aligns with your brand, absolutely take it. Like the only branded post I actually have is the Samsung paid post that was only going to benefit me. They did a whole documentary. It was Inception. They filmed me making a film. Mm-hmm. So like their paid post was a basically a 3-minute clip on me about how I create my film. And that's the only thing on my Instagram feed that is actually branded and paid for, but it's matches me and it highlights me in such an authentic, organic way that it was easy for me to say yes. Yeah. Now, if you gave me skinny gummies and told me I'll pay you $5 to say you got skinny because of these gummy bears, we're not on alignment here. So I speak to all the filmmakers who sometimes feel like it's unfair when they see actors who are not actors, but they're influencers with millions of followings getting cast in these roles that people work so hard for. It's like, I understand that, but let's change the game. Let's be smart about it. Let's equip you with the tools that you need to just be on the same playing field. I got this gig through Instagram because I probably hashtag something filmmaker of color, and they were probably trying to fill like another person of color or wanted to diversify the four filmmakers that they selected for this opportunity. So you never know who's looking at your stuff.
Absolutely.
And
very true. Yeah.
It's also important to, as actors, filmmakers, like Instagram, anything visual, that's kind of like your business portfolio.
Yeah.
What you put out there is what you're also going to get. So I would say like, it is important, even though as much as I know actors and filmmakers who hate the idea of like pixelating or compressing their content, it shows that you're doing work, you're active. So when people are looking for people like you, you will show up on their feed a lot more and they will reach out to you in the DMs. I swear it will happen because that's been happening with me. And so I can't knock social media. It's connected me with so many opportunities that I never imagined. Like, how did you find me? But you got to make yourself searchable too.
Absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, you are a brand as well. They pay you because of your eye, your vision. You're a director, but it's like, why would they hire you over somebody else? Because you have a unique storytelling perspective. They're paying you for your eye that they can't get paying other people to tell the same story. So, you know, what you put on your feed, what you present to the world, that's your brand. It's a part of you. So, you know, that's why I always say like, well, people think you sell out if you like take branded deals, but I'm like, well, it can be if you make it that way, but you don't have to make it that way. You can work with the brands that align with your values.
Yes.
And if they're willing to pay you for it, take it.
And there's no shame in saying, hey, I have to put gas in my car, food on the table, pay the rent. And Nikki, I agree with you. I've cast films and hired film crews through hashtags on Instagram when I was living in LA and I needed to film in Michigan.
Yeah.
I was like, I need a DP. I need an editor. I'm going to throw up some Film Michigan hashtags. And I found this film crew I still work with today. And I was like, wow, that worked. And then I got on the phone with one producer and he was like, call this sound engineer, call this editor. And there was this tight-knit group in Michigan. But it's social media. Yes, it can be a very negative thing. We know this. But in terms of being business professional in this day and age, this is not 1990 where we're like, oh, okay, I need to pull out the yellow pages and I have to get an agent to send me out and I have to rely on my publicist. We're our own publicists.
Yeah.
And social media is not for everybody, but I find it very empowering that yes, you talk about control. You can control your brand and who are you networking with in these communities. You can use it in a really positive way as a creator. I have a question for you. Because you said you didn't like the word influencer. I have a friend, shout out to my friend Teresa Ryan. We'll have you as a guest, Teresa. She hates the word, she hates the phrase, she hates the word content. And she releases some comedic, hilarious, comedic genius videos on TikTok and her Instagram. But I was like, you hate the word content? I was like, I like content creator. Why do you hate that? And then I saw other people saying it who are like, stop calling art content. And I'm like, I like the word art and I like the word content. How do you feel about the word content?
Yeah. I guess I want to understand. So she would just say art instead of content. Like I create art.
You know, it was funny. Versus, yeah,
I create content. Like what is that interchangeable word?
That's a great question for her. I think she just meant art. Cause I said it was a stupid Facebook post where I was like, words that give me the icks. I hate the word bestie. I was like, I've never understood the word bestie. I'm not going to use it. I don't like the word selfie. Anything with an IE that you make cutesy, and people thought that was funny. There's like 50 comments about, oh, I hate the word hubby. And then my friend Teresa writes content. And I was like, and I, but I think for her, she feels that it's kind of interchangeable with the influencer thing. She feels like I don't want to speak for Teresa. I want her to speak for herself, but maybe it's this like, it's like diminishing a real actor, comedian, filmmaker, artist into, oh, you're just one of those reality star influencers. I'm saying in air quotes, like you're not a real artist. You're this content creator on TikTok. But I'm like, you're either making good stuff or you're not. Who cares if it's on TikTok? You're creating something. So I kind of think it's just part of the times we're living in, but do you have any feeling about the word content, or you're just like, whatever, it's fine?
Well, content, I think, you know, it's interesting because when I was working at CSUN, I think after a while, because I had to work on like basically 10 campaigns a month and I had to create all this content, it did seem like a fast food version of what I love to do. Yeah. And in a way, like you were saying, it kind of felt like it was diminishing what I really wanted to create with intention. I see. You know, films take up to like 2 to 5 years and it's like art. It's like it's a masterpiece. Yeah. It's like an involved process that, you know, is storyboarding and everything. It's very well thought out. And content to me is kind of like, okay, any piece of content that goes on TikTok, a photo is a content, a GIF is a content, a TikTok video is content. And, you know, it's just kind of like, it makes it, same with the word influencer. I feel like it goes into this box of like, always chasing the trend only and caring if it goes viral without really thinking about the artistry. And so for filmmakers, I feel, who have gone to film school or like really care about the shot or the framing, like just a smidge over would be, you know, the difference in the world for like a cinematographer. Right. And, you know, even when we're telling cinematographers now, like, oh, we need to create vertical content, like they cringe. Like, oh my gosh, like I refuse to shoot content vertically. You know, it's like, this is whatever. So I do cross the line. I have a foot in traditional and a foot in like non-traditional, just like I've done throughout life. Because again, like we're always learning. It's always like evolving. We have to adapt and change, always evolve, but also keep the biggest parts of it. And which again, in my opinion, is your unique point of view, your story. As long as you carry that with you throughout, who cares how you share it?
Right.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you want to share it in such a cinematic way, take the time, develop the script to do that. But if you want to share it and get the point out and get views and, you know, just get like a message across, do that too. You're not a sellout. You're not an imposter. Right. You're not like less of an artist. An artist will always be an artist if you choose to make that your craft. Mm-hmm. But that, I think for me, influencer is like, well, you have to be able to influence somebody positively in my way, like whether you're a good influence, a bad influence. And when I said I was creating content and like what, you know, someone asked me what I do and I'm like, oh, I manage social media and I, you know, do their social media. It's like, oh my God. So you're like an influencer. All you do is take photos. Like, I could totally do that too.
They just
diminished
what you do.
Like, my job was so easy. It just diminished what I did.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I kind of have like just such a negative reaction when I hear those words. But you know, I think artist, creative director, you know, I think those are a little bit more appropriate for the line of work that we do. But I mean, again, it is your individual perspective.
Yeah.
Like just because somebody doesn't like calling it content doesn't mean another person's not. So it really just depends on who you're talking to. And I think that also respects people individually for who they are and the unique perspective that they bring to the table versus putting everybody under one giant umbrella.
Yeah. I think we're all creators. We're all storytellers. I like content creator. Mm-hmm. So however you want to label that, either your stuff is moving people or it's not, right?
Yeah. You know? And all you can do is be you, be authentically you, which that, like you said, Nikki, that's the bottom line. And lead with kindness, like you said, is and everything you do.
Yeah.
So So let's dive into some fun questions.
Yes. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, this has all been very fun. So
yeah, for sure. For sure. It has. It's been a very important conversation, and I've been kind of lurking in the shadows here because I'm learning, as we go along, and I love it. It's a great discussion. So
it is.
Who inspires you, Nikki?
Oh my gosh. It's so cliche, but life inspires me. Ooh. I would say person wise though, my dad had inspired me the most. He passed away 5 years ago from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, but his perspective and outlook on how he handled and viewed life even during those times have been the most impactful parts of my life. I think that has allowed me to carry on this legacy of life is short. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to hold grudges against people. Like if things can be worked out, work it out, but nothing is worth just going to bed unhappy in life. It has given me all the push during the pandemic as well. So in a way, the pandemic coupled with my dad has inspired the way that I live my life currently, knowing that any day we could be, having to wear a mask or stay inside the house or like, so if I'm ever at that point where I know mortality is inevitable, and I've accepted that reality. And since accepting that reality and having such strong examples in my life to allow me to accept that reality, it has only made me go for the things that I want in life that much stronger and that much harder. Cause I could die tomorrow. I literally don't mean to say this to be morbid at all, but if I were to go tomorrow, I would want to know that I did everything I could in this life to create the kind of impact or relationships or, friendships with people and never feel like somebody would have anything unkind to say about what I chose to do in this world, or I like hurt them or I offended them. And, I think just doing what you love, is important because if I went tomorrow and I was stuck at a desk job, and I never got to do the things that I wanted to do, that would be like the biggest regret. And they said the richest place is, what would they say? The richest place is the cemeteries, because all these brilliant million dollar ideas kind of die with them because their last words are like, what did you regret or what did you ever wish you could do? And they would say all these things. And I'm like, I'm trying to do all the things that I want to do now, so I don't ever feel like I have to regret. I don't want to feel like I have to hit rock bottom in order for me to understand what rock bottom is or what it is like to make it. I think also growing up, when you think your college essays are like, oh my God, I don't have a sad story. How are they going to accept me in college? Like, I don't have anything crazy to tell in order for me to get into college. But again, knowing that you are enough, A, and B, that again, you have your own unique perspective and story to tell. It is up to you how you wish to share it with the world. And I would say like my dad has been like a huge inspiration for me, and just kind of the times that we're living in right now, and knowing that mortality is inevitable. So
none of us are getting out of this alive.
I said I want to leave.
We aren't.
I might as well live how I live now, but respectfully and kindly. And I'm not going to go out and take off my mask and cough on everybody. Like who would do that? You know, so I'm just saying, like,
some Americans would do that.
Knowing that.
Yep.
Nikki, can I ask a question about your dad? Was he the type of dad that even as a little girl, your answer might be no. I'm going with my intuition. Did he kind of always teach you that you could do and become anything you wanted? Was he one of those dads?
I was very fortunate to have parents that were not the stereotypical tiger parents. Like, I just wanted to do good on my own. My dad actually grew up on the East Coast, and him and his brother were the only two Asian people in their school. But He was the class president. Mm. He was the captain of the
my
varsity.
My dad
varsity.
Was the class president too. Oh my God. Wow. They were both alphas and they both died of cancer.
Yeah.
Interesting parallels.
Oh, I'm so sorry you're there.
Yeah, but you know what though? But when you teach your daughter, you could be a boss, like, okay, watch out because they're going to try to take over the world. Like, you have these parents who instilled this confidence in you. I can tell.
Yeah, there's the confidence. And then, you know, he really broke me out of my shell for public speaking. My dad was a business person and he took me to my first NAB show back in like 2010 when I was still like a college student. And he's like, I'm willing to pay the $300 it costs for me to go so you can go and I can show you how to network. And like, what dad does that?
Yeah.
You know, like we can take a father-daughter trip down to Las Vegas and I'll show you how to network. You know, I couldn't go to all the parties because I wasn't 21, but you know, I just remember him saying, one day you're going to speak on that stage. You don't know what it is, but one day you're going to speak. And like flash forward to 2018, I'm emceeing the post-production stage. I'm with the Gals and Gear team, you know, making more space for women and people of color on these panels that are so dominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just doing more things with NAB show directly like this year. So it's just like a full circle moment. And, you know, at the times when I felt like, oh man, this is unfair. This is like not my day to day or like just things and that didn't go my way. I always have seen like the silver lining and also seen like if I had gotten this gig, actually, even though it seemed great at the time, I might have not gotten this gig because I would have been in a different country. And this gig is actually what serves me more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've learned to let things go.
Mm-hmm. You can only control so much.
A lot easier.
Yep.
Yeah, you can only control and how you respond to it is what you can control. So I think, you know, just knowing that, you know, like, I don't really believe that everything happens for a reason. But when the opportunity does come and you can make that choice, I let things go a lot easier if I can't control it. And I've always found the positive or the silver lining in that, that allows me to continue progress and move forward. And looking back on those choices, I just am much more a peaceful person. And also just more of a, I believe in manifestation of like, you say exactly what you want. Cause at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, it'd be nice to direct something one day. I just don't think I'll have the time for it this year. And then October 2020, like the day I was going to switch from an iPhone finally, which my family would have been so happy to not have me be the green dot in the bubble in the group text. That day was the day Samsung reached out to me and said, hey, we'd like to, would you be interested if we gave you a Samsung phone and paid you, you know, to use Samsung for the next like 6 months.
Yeah.
And shoot a film.
Wow.
You know, and I'm like, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
You know, things are happening so crazy.
Synchronicity. I always say when the universe, like, when you talk to the universe, it talks back. And sometimes it's very quick. And you're like, was that a sign or was that in my head? And I've learned to believe through wisdom and experience, like if it seems like a sign and it feels like it is, it is. It just, it depends on if you want to receive it and if you, are you listening, you know, because when you're putting positive things into the world, you'll get those affirmations if you're paying attention that you're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
I fully believe
that.
I feel fully.
And I, that's why I'm like, you know, my dad still inspires me to this day. I feel like a lot of things have happened because of how he's raised me and also just the opportunities that have come into my life. They are very naturally all tied with him, like a lot in my life of what he's taught me. So it's knowing that even self-defense, like we did karate, like I had my first degree black belt in Taekwondo and like started training in Krav Maga. And he made me watch Taken by Liam Neeson before I traveled anywhere. So I'm like, he wanted to scare me. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, you live in as a woman trying to best prepare you and self-defend you from like the cruelties of this unfortunate world at times, but then you also are getting trained and be told that you can do whatever you want, but just don't go out alone at night or like hold the keys in between your hand or, you know, like, so there's always been like, you know, identity is, it's this push and pull of like a balance in this world of like being uniquely you. And it's unfortunate that we even have to nowadays, you know, tying it all back, like to even have like our grandparents like learn self-defense because for fear of someone's going to just randomly attack them or harass them or murder them in broad daylight. You know, it's unfortunate, but the fortunate thing that has come out of it is our community has like been so vigilant and have come together mm-hmm. and we have strengthened our community and like really branching out and getting to know one another and who else is in our community. So again, there's always certain things that happen with any incidents, and you know, it's on us to really figure out like what it is and what we can do to make and create positive impact and change through that.
Hell yeah.
Amazing. Hella awesome. That's all I gotta say.
You have more questions, Michael. Keep going. I love it.
Wait, is it wicked cool wicked. For the Southern California? Wicked cool.
Love it. Wicked. Wicked. That sounds like Boston too, right?
Wicked smart. Yeah. That's a shout wicked out to smart. My friend yeah. Bill Doherty Jr., the Bostonians, yeah. and my friend Heidi, in case you listen. All right. What's your next question, Mike?
If you could dinner with three people alive or dead, who would it be?
It's a big question.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I think I got asked this question during my Google interview, actually.
Oh, really?
Corporate interviews with Michael McKinney.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, definitely it would be like with my dad, for sure. It would be one of them.
Yeah.
I would say, gosh, another person. Oh, Bruce Lee. Mm.
Nice.
Bruce Lee actually had a huge impact on my dad. And because of that, I was able to interview Shannon Lee, Bruce's daughter.
Wow. So 101.
Cool. Yeah.
Full circle. I even got to show her all the pictures and, you know, all of that. And I think just actually my mom too. I think I've always wanted to just witness as an adult, you know, the conversations that happened that I missed growing up. Mm. Like, you know, just the subtleties of like realizing that your parents are actually human and people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. Yes.
And after learning everything, you know, in this life and just naturally evolving in my own mental state too, it's just, I would love to just go back in time and just like talk with what I know now and just have a adult conversation mm-hmm. with my parents, because mm-hmm. I don't think I really got to ask a lot of these questions until unfortunately very late.
Yeah.
So I think I'd like to go back and kind of like sort through my identity a little bit more through their conversations of how they met and all that stuff, because I realize that our parents are humans and mm-hmm. people too.
Yep. Yep.
For sure. Yeah. So true. Wow. Beautifully said.
Can I throw a question in there?
Please.
All right. I got some random ones, but I'm like excited about them because, again, I'm a dork. I'll own it.
Yeah.
Favorite cartoon as a child?
Mm.
Oh, as a child.
Why? I think that's so funny.
That's a great question.
I don't know what was considered child, but Sailor Moon was like literally my all-time favorite.
I just thought
my
about Sailor Moon
Sailor
last
Mars
night.
Costume. Yeah, I would say, yeah, Sailor Moon. I had the Japanese versions. I thought the chocolate covered gummy bears and the candy stores were like the little elixirs that Chibi Chibi Moon would hold. I even had the bed sheets,
the Sailor Moon like bed sheets.
Yeah,
my best friend in middle school was obsessed with Sailor Moon, and she got me into it. It was like you just kind of couldn't look away. Like, it's just,
yeah, you can't.
But
I would like pretend in my mind to transform into like one. You know, when you have to hold your breath under those tunnels, that when you go drive through tunnels, yeah. I would just pretend I was like doing that transformation process in the tunnel. I'm like, oh, moon power.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I love Sailor Moon. I still love it to this day. But like more to cosplay, even though I've never been to a Comic-Con or a WonderCon or AnimeCon, but I see people who do that. And I'm like, oh, that's
watch cool. After this podcast, you're going to get a call from someone like, hey, Nikki, we were hoping you could host at Comic-Con.
Yes.
Yeah. Just because we're talking about it, like signs from the universe.
Just put it out there. Yeah. I do want that game.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Mike, you ask a question. These are the fun questions. You got any more?
I w- would say, well, you answered a lot of them that I had actually, which is amazing. You read my mind. So, I would say what's your best memory that you've had in LA?
Oh, man.
I mean, you've got some great ones that you shared already.
There's so many only in so LA moments. Like, I remember my first celebrity sighting, I think, was Justin Timberlake. And I was like, is that Justin Timberlake sitting on the patio at this diner? And you just, it's only in LA stuff. We all have those stories.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my
gosh.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like there's not one, but if I could categorize it all, I think it's just been how welcoming the, I'm a part of so many Asians in Hollywood, Asians in entertainment groups, how welcoming I felt, not being from LA, to feel not just like a transplant, but like really embraced by the community here, especially the filmmaking community, and just being like, just going to K-Town or get Korean barbecue or just like the food outings. Like, there's an abundance of food really in LA food. And I haven't tried them
food
all.
Trucks.
And like, there's so many secret things, but just the friendships and families formed here where you can create your own family out here, you know,
sure,
and it's on
sure.
you to like drop the toxic people and like, I do believe in new friends. You know, Drake has that no new friends, but I'm like, I do believe that you can have new friends. Obviously, it's just, it depends on where you're at and, you know, depending on your, you know, however you are. But I do believe that I've been able to really meet some amazing, authentic, genuine people. It's not the stereotypical like Hollywood is shady kind of people. Like, I'm like, I don't know where you get that, because every single person I choose to at least associate myself with or is in my circle have been like so supportive. Community is so strong out here. I think just finally establishing an identity for myself and feeling celebrated and valued for it has been the biggest takeaway moving to Los Angeles. Cause I mean, it's not like it didn't happen in the Bay, but it's just that, you know, when you're growing up with childhood friends, like, you know, they see you as that stage and chapter of your life. But I just feel like I'm just thriving in this hub now because I'm surrounded by people who want to see each other win and succeed. And that it's the bossness, the queenness that comes with surrounding yourself with other badass women, because empowered women empower other women, empowered people empower other people. And I feel like I'm at this point where, like in my adult life, that I have so many people surrounding me who are their own bosses that uplift each other. And it's just been such a nice energy, a loving energy to just be like in that area, even in the pandemic, you know, like you can still feel that the need to want to see each other and do things with each other, collaborate, work together, is there. So I think those are like my best collective memories of so far being in Los Angeles.
So cool. Such a good answer. And that's, yeah, I agree. That's what it's, when you can support each other and find that group of people that you're not competing with each other. You're like, hey, I've got your back. You've got mine. I want you to succeed. Your success doesn't mean that I'm failing.
Right.
You know, and it's a beautiful thing to have that and surround yourself with that. So that's
absolutely
awesome.
It's like Sailor Moon, right? It's like everybody has something to bring to the table.
Yeah.
And like together, you're like this girl squad. Speaking of which, I just wanted to bring it back full circle. Another memory is Justine has been my idol for the longest time. And I recently spoke at, during January 2020, right before the pandemic, I taught an audio and video class at her vlog university. And then, you know, kept in touch. She's an amazing human being. I did see her at Google Glass back in 2014, but I didn't get to say hi to her. And then flash forward to this past March, I just launched my website, Technically Speaking, and I asked if she could be my first guest, and she totally did. She was my guest. We had like a half an hour conversation at her house. You know, she like brought her like videographer and her lights and set it all up nice for me, promoted it, and I cannot thank her enough. I'm so humbled by that experience. She has really paid it forward for so many women in tech and filmmakers in general. And that she was able to do that for me. Like, it just meant a lot, you know? And so I think it's also a testament to, I hope that people realize that I am a trustworthy person, because you don't just give your house address to people, right, or, you know, all these things. So I'm just like, even when someone gives me their home address, I'm like, oh, whoa, like, you're a celebrity. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm so honored. Like, of course, I'm not going to like it, like, give your information out, but just to feel entrusted with that kind of information, mm-hmm, is kind of like, it's just been like a really positive experience out here. And sure, obviously, like, the people you surround yourself with is also a reflection of what you bring to the table as well. So I think for me, it's just constantly working on what I can bring to the table, how I can help other people. And then, like, you know, then everybody's thriving. You know, it's not, mm-hmm, like, you know, it's like everybody's just going and we're just trying to like help each other out along the way. So it's just it's been a great experience in LA. Sure.
That's awesome to hear.
I want to ask, I think this is funny every time we do this, Mike, because I feel like, yeah, there's always a generation gap moment. Nikki, did you ever watch Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton? Did you ever watch that show? No? You and our last guest, Andrew, too. It's so funny.
No.
It's totally generation gap.
We're so old.
Mike, we might be the last, because I remember being in college, like in my little dorm room, like glued to the TV because he was such a good interviewer. And when he would interview people like Robin Williams, but at the end of each show, he asks these questions to everybody. So I'm going to fire these questions at you. Don't overthink it. Just say first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Perfect.
What is your favorite?
Hopefully it's this or that.
What's that?
Hopefully it's a this or that.
It's just like what comes to your mind, and it's fun. It's fun. What is your favorite word?
Literally.
Literally?
Because I cannot pronounce it the other way, but it's, I don't know. I would say pão de queijo is my favorite word because I like to eat that all day. Mm. But I don't know.
Okay. Your least favorite word.
Influencer.
What's your favorite curse word?
Oh man. Probably the F word.
I love that you didn't say it. Very professional.
Like, are you gonna beep it out?
No, you can say, we swear like sailor moon.
If you want to say the F word, that's all right.
I think it's because I don't really know any other curse words or what's considered a curse words besides like just fuck, you know? I'm like, well, is shit a curse word? I remember saying that when I missed the volleyball in sixth grade. I've never sworn in my life. I don't swear often. Like, so when I missed the volleyball in sixth grade and I said shit, the whole school looked at me and were like, ooh. I felt so shamed saying that word, and I was an RA. I was always in positions of like leadership.
I was an
or, like,
RA
class
too.
President or like
the stuff we had.
RA.
RA is hilarious.
So I'm just like, I never like said all this stuff, and you know, so I'm like, oh man. But my RA partner, bless her heart, I love you, Jennifer. But she swore like a sailor. So being around her, I just started swearing. And my mom recently, she's like, you swear a lot nowadays. I don't like it.
Oh no.
And I'm like, oops. But yeah, I'm just like, do I swear a lot? But I guess because my favorite word is fuck.
Nice.
It's a very popular answer.
It emphasizes everything.
It's the answer I gave.
I don't know what other word there is.
Okay, don't overthink this. Or, you know, as I preface everything too much. What turns you on?
Yeah.
What turns you on?
I think a passion for my community is like just number one for me. It like turns on everything I do in life and how I show up every day for work and for myself and for others.
Perfect answer. What turns you off?
Closed-minded people. Mm-hmm. I feel like that involves like racism, hatred, all that stuff. Like, I think if you're closed-minded to not even want to have a conversation about things that we differ on, like, that turns me off because you're basically shutting down saying, I don't want to understand. I don't want to get to know you. And so that feels like a very personal attack sometimes. But yeah, I would say that.
What sound do you love?
I think when my kitchen timer goes off and I know it's ready to eat.
What sound do you hate?
Food. Oh gosh. I think when I've recently, when I've been on Zoom interviews, the power washer that comes at certain times that interrupts my interviews.
Oh yeah.
So I don't like that power washer dude or whatever. And Saturday's at 7 a.m. in the morning of all days and time too. So I'm like, no, I don't like that sound.
What profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Oh, goodness gracious. I have four growing up, but I would just say the one, I thought I was going to be a country singer.
What? I love it. Never would have guessed that. That's amazing.
No, amazing. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. What profession other than yours would you never like to attempt?
You know that, I guess it is a profession, but I'm like, you know, the people who take off the roadkill off the street?
Yes.
Yeah,
they
never do that.
Yeah.
No roadkill collector for you. Got it.
Yeah.
And the last question, is, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Man. I don't know. I would just like the welcome. Like, you made it.
It's a good answer.
Yeah.
And
I think like life is just beginning.
Ooh,
you know, just
that's
like
a
life
really
is
good
end.
Answer.
Love that.
Life is.
Yes.
I feel like that might be the best answer I've ever heard.
Yeah,
life is
great.
Just beginning. Because a lot of people obviously think of death as an ending, but
right,
yeah, life is.
But
just
it's only
beginning.
Just beginning,
oh,
honey.
I love that.
Yeah, I love it. And one more question:
yes.
What is I Justine's home address?
Bleep this, edit that out.
That's programmed.
I do have one more question because I used to noticed in my hiring days for that women's organization, we would joke about how I would hire within astrology, you just hired 10 fire signs. You're only hiring Sagittarius and Aries and what's the other fire sign? Leo. It was like a joke behind the office doors. What's your astrology sign, Nikki?
I'm a Capricorn.
Earth sign.
Oh.
I'm a January baby.
I'm a January baby too, but I'm an Aquarius. I was wrong. What's yours, Michael? I don't even think I know your sign. Do I not know your sign?
Gemini.
Oh, you're an air sign. Gemini. So Michael and I are both air signs. That's why we're incapable
I'm
of having
earth
a
sign.
Woman hour podcast. Your earth sign, organized boss woman, Capricorn to the T. I love it. Nikki, you're an
inspiration.
You're an inspiration.
Yeah.
You're a
seriously
badass boss.
Oh, thank you.
Such a delight. Mm-hmm. I could talk to you for another 7 hours, but it was so good to reconnect like this. And
absolutely.
Michael,
thank
you
for
any
doing
other
this.
Questions?
Yeah. Well, just anything you want to, that you have coming up, that you want to talk about, on the horizon for you,
website links, etc.
Yeah. I would just say, I just recently launched my website. So, Nikki speaking, it's Nikki is spelled Nikki.com is my new initiative to provide film and tech resources to all while also highlighting and interviewing, amplifying more women and filmmakers of color on my website. But you can follow me everywhere at Nikki Sun, NikiSun. And the projects I have coming up that are free, sign up for my newsletter. I do send out things that I'm doing or speaking at, and they're usually mostly all free resources, basically how to get paid, creating content, day in the life of a filmmaker. So, it's all these resources. Follow my YouTube channel too if you're interested in the gear and tech aspect of what camera, what lighting do I need to get to make my at-home work routine flourish or shine. So, I mean, that's the stuff that I'm really, really into. But I would say follow me on Instagram. I posted my stories all the time.
Yeah.
So we can stay connected that way for sure. But reach out. Don't be a stranger. We'll figure out a way to collaborate, most definitely.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, this was an amazing conversation, and we love and appreciate you, Nikki. You're delightful.
Yes.
And an inspiration.
Thank you. I love and appreciate you both for having me. I really, really appreciate always just being one of the first guests for any podcast. It really speaks volumes to me of, you know, of where it's, where you'd like your podcast to go. And so if there's anything I can do to help promote it, you know, marketing materials or assets, you guys have been such a lovely co-hosts and have allowed me to share so much of my story today. And I didn't feel like limited or cut for time at all. So thank you for allowing me such a wonderful space to share my story as we are all trying to share in this world.
Oh, of course. Our pleasure. And like, and you're my hero now, Nikki. So I'm a huge fan. And
Mike's fanboying out.
Yeah.
Fanboy. We're going to get you to Michigan. Have you ever been to the Mitten before? You've probably, have you been here?
Well, I have all my cousins like went to Michigan. My last cousin, one of my younger cousins just got into Michigan. But no, I don't think I've ever really been recently. Yeah.
All right, Mike, we're going to get her out here for a project.
Yeah, we'll show you Detroit. We'll introduce you to Detroit and the
gorgeous
place
to make movies for sure. And I'd
love
to.
Yes.
I've always in my mind thought I have to have Nikki film something. And I, you know, when that manifesting, right? It was wonderful seeing you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for being here on Film Saves World. And also, do you also send people to nikkisun.com? Do you still use that website also? I was poking around on that,
but that's more like my portfolio.
Okay. All right, cool.
It's more my portfolio. Technically speaking, it's more of like my just film and tech side. And then Nikki Sun everywhere else is like where you can like chat with
me. Cool.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you all so much.